The Wasatch County School Board plans to hold a bond election in November to deal with the nonstop growth there. On the phone to tell us more about that, as well as some other items, I have the superintendent of the Wasatch County School District, Terry Shoemaker. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So before we get to the bond, let's talk budget a bit. I'm guessing that's set for approval later this month?
Yes, it is. It's scheduled for later this month, so we're looking forward to that. The budget hearing, I'm just trying to look on my calendar real quick to make sure I give you the right day for that, is scheduled for, let's see.
Is it the 18th, Thursday?
Yes. No, it's Tuesday.
Tuesday. So that would be the 16th or the 23rd, I'm guessing.
It's the 16th.
Okay.
It is the 16th. Thank you.
All right. So what kind of increase are we seeing in the budget from the current year budget? Anything
well,
there?
Yeah, because the legislature certainly received additional funds to school districts, a 4% increase in the WPU. So, yeah, our budget is going up slightly, from 1 year, from $63 million to $64 million, just basically a million dollar increase there. So, in the budget and expenditures. So we're doing fine that way. We look forward to next year, and we see the budget basically is just continuing to do the things that we've set as priorities for our school district. We're grateful for the increase that the legislature provided. We wish it could have been a little bit more, but we're thankful for what they've done.
All right. So any kind of tax increase proposed other than if the bond should pass?
Well, the bond discussion is the board is considering a bond. We're certainly very serious about it as we're talking to the public about it. But the board has not passed a bond resolution for that formally yet. So as it relates to the budget for next year, no, there's no tax increases associated with it other than what the legislature allocated as part of their session, and there was a slight tax increase that they did with equalization.
Right. Certainly the biggest expense of any school district is personnel. So how did teacher negotiations go for you this year?
Well, we're not finalized on that. It's been going fine. We just simply, they have a package to present to their members now, and they're doing that. And so it'd be inappropriate for me to discuss what those numbers are at this particular time. But, the session itself went well, and we're just waiting for them to ratify what's been proposed.
Okay.
What has been proposed.
Yeah. Are you trying to give them some kind of an increase?
Sure. We're trying to give them some kind of a raise. And we had a 4.25% increase in health insurance premium. There's costs associated with our salary schedules. All of those things go into the compensation package that the teachers are considering right now.
Yeah. So is this something you have to do every year, or do you try to get negotiations on a multi-year contract?
No, we do this every year. Other school districts do multi-year things, but we do not do that. We wait to see what the legislature allocates, and then negotiate with our different employee groups.
Okay. Certainly, another large budget item over the last several years has been the digitalization of the school district. You've been providing laptops and tablets to teachers and students. What kind of investment have you made there?
Well, that's been a significant investment. This coming school year, we intend to provide laptops for our students in K through 2, at least one to every two student, and then for grades 3 and 4, one to one. That would then complete this whole process so that we would have what we call a digital conversion in all of our classrooms. And so this coming school year, it looks like the investment is somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.3 million.
Yeah,
and that's in the budget.
All right, and that has been, I'm guessing, about what you've been spending then over the last...
Somewhere, it's in that range. It's somewhere in that range each year, depending on how many grade levels we bring on. But that gives you a rough idea of what the additional expenditure has been to the budget. And that comes from capital funds that we have, because most of those things are capital expenditures. Most of the expenses, capital expenditures.
So once the student graduates, do they turn back their...
Every year they turn the laptops back in.
And you're able to reuse those, or are they outdated?
Oh, yes. Oh, no. We have a cycle. They're placed on a 3 or 4 year cycle. And we bring them back in. We refurbish them. We do what needs to be done, re-image them, get them all ready to go back to the student next year, and they get back the computer that they had, unless, of course, it needs to be replaced for some odd reason. Sometimes that happens, but that's our pattern. Our pattern is to bring them back in, get them re-imaged, make sure they're in great shape, and then hand them back to the kids at the beginning of the school year.
All right. I know some patrons have questioned whether the district is getting the best price for these. Park City School District, I believe, uses Apple products, and there's an educational discount from Apple. Do you have a similar deal?
Well, what we do is we bid out all of our laptops. So in other words, multiple companies bid on that, and we take the best responsible bid, which is state statute on that. We're feeling comfortable with the prices that we're getting on these devices. There are different devices for different age groups that we use, and so we're comfortable with what we're paying for these things at this time. The important thing for us is make sure that we purchase something that has enough longevity, hopefully, with it that it can stay with us for these 4 years that we need these devices to be working. But there's a different rotation that goes through to make sure that we're not doing them all at once.
Sure.
So that's how we follow this plan. That's the plan we're following right now, and that's we're comfortable with the prices we're paying. We're comfortable with the quality of materials that we're using, and so far that seems to be working for us.
All right. Well, let's talk about growth. It's not stopping. How is the school district managing one of the fastest growing areas of the country?
You know, I appreciate talking about this a little bit. That's one of our great challenges. Wasatch County is the eighth fastest growing county of its size in the nation, and Heber City is the third fastest micropolitan. These are census estimates or census figures of its size in the nation. So we deal, every year we deal with the challenge of having significant growth to deal with. The fortunate thing that we have is that we can average this over the last more than 20 years. It's been a 3% increase if you average it. And so we tend to do that as we estimate for the future. And so our budgeting process always builds into this 3%. It's a very consistent number. We use other data sources such as the census things that come from the University of Utah and Pam Perlick and others. You know, that helps us with these estimates. But the challenge we have is we have to continue to be either adding the facilities, which we've done over the last several years, or be planning to bond for new facilities, and that's what we're trying to do right now.
All right. So when do you have to make that decision whether or not you go ahead and put a bond on November's ballot?
That has to be done prior to the end of August. So the board at this point is gathering as much data and much information from the public as we possibly can, gathering proposals on the kinds of buildings that we're looking at, and talking to the public to see where we are relative to this as they contemplate whether to do this bond or consider other alternatives such as year-round schools.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about that here. I mean, if the district moves forward, I mean, I know you're still trying to put it together, but your website talks about very specific projects.
That's right.
And that being a new elementary school?
A new elementary school to be built in the Daniel area, a new junior high school to be built in just east of Heber City near our old Mill Elementary School. When I say junior high, I'm talking about middle-level school. That'd be a 6-8 school. And then we're also, the other facility is our pool facility is woefully inadequate for both our community and for our needs. There was a bond project that the county tried to put forward last November that failed. What we are proposing is a facility that would meet our educational needs and much of what we think the community is interested in. It's half the size of what was proposed last November by the county. But we have to have something different for our swim teams, for our current swim programs that we've been operating for nearly 40 years now. And so we think the community will be more amenable to this. That's what we hope for. That's part of the conversations. That and all these other things that we're talking about are part of the conversations we're having with the community right now.
Okay, and all that totals up to like $62 million?
$62 million. $62 million. $33 million for the junior high school, $18.5 million for the elementary school, and $10.5 million for the swimming facility.
Hmm. Now, the pool would be in the same location as it was proposed for last year?
No, the pool location would be actually just directly west of our current football stadium. There's a practice field there that football and other folks use. That would also be, that's where we would place that pool facility. You know, if this proposal comes to fruition and the people vote on it and the bond passes, we would also take one of our schools, Timpanogos Intermediate School, which currently houses our 5-6 grades, nearly 1,000 students, and we would change the configuration to have K-5 elementary schools, 6-8 middle-level schools. We now would have two of them, and then we'd have 9-12 high school again, but we would use that 5-6 facility, which is right next to our high school, as an extension of Wasatch High School. In essence, it becomes the overflow. We don't have to add on to the building. We just simply use an existing facility that, frankly, is right close to this pool area, right close to the football area, right close to the track, right close to the high school, right close to, for those who take that, the seminary building. Everything's right there, and it just becomes part of an extensive high school campus. Right now, our high school is just under 1,800 students. We anticipate it's going to grow to over 2,000 in the next 3 or so years. So we know we need this, and this is going to help us. This overflow with this facility we currently have will help deal with the challenges associated with the crowding at the high school, too.
Yeah. Now, when you passed the bond for the high school several years ago, I mean, it was the building that was going to last 15 years. We're not even at a third of that, huh?
Well, the building is going to last 100 years. What we did was we changed the configuration then to, we went to, and it Wasatch High School for many, many years was only three grades, 10, 11, and 12. But when we, to help us with not having to have another bond immediately for other things, we elected to go ahead and change the configuration and place kids where we had space. And that's And so we added another grade level to the high school, which, of course, increased the numbers of students that were there. But we're also dealing with the fact that what we talked about at the beginning of this conversation is that this community continues to grow very, very rapidly. And so what we're trying to do is utilize all our spaces to maximize efficiency as best we can. This other site that I talked about as an extension of the high school can have, I mean, it currently has nearly 1,000 students in it now. So you get some idea that it could house something similar to that. Not that we want the high school to grow to 2,800 students, but allows that possibility should the boards of education want us to have a much, much, much larger high school. The conversation about another high school will certainly occupy the minds of many in this community as we continue to grow, but at least we have the place for students as we talk about that conversation down the road. We think we've got a good another 10 years, should this bond pass, to deal with this, but we'll have to wait and see. Again, you know, a lot of this depends on decisions by others as it relates to development, and we certainly don't know who's going to move into any facility that's available in our community, whether they have children or not. But we are fairly confident that the growth rate that we've been using has helped us as we plan for what we're doing presently and what we're going to be doing in the future, and we think we've got a good plan to deal with these things.
Okay. The bond does not include any money for land, because you do have,
we have
a 10-acre
property
site
in all these places.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've already purchased those things, and we're grateful for that, so it doesn't include additional costs for land purchase, which is a big deal.
So the 10-acre site in Daniel, though, my understanding is that you don't have sewer at that location.
Well, we don't necessarily have to have sewer to build a school. A good example of where a place that doesn't have a sewer, but it's a fairly large facility, is Eden, Utah, in Weber County. So we've kind of checked that facility out, spoken to the folks in Weber County School District, spoken to our own health department and others. We can put a very doable septic system on our site and have it work out very well if we have to go down that road. So that's, you know, that's part of what we do. There are sewer systems nearby. The question is whether or not Danieltown is going to allow them to come through, or the question might be, do we do this septic system? But we're comfortable that we can put a septic system in that would work, because we know others have done it and done it successfully, and our health department knows it can be done successfully also.
Okay, so that's where you would build it then, that the new school at that 10-acre site in Daniel?
Well, that site is one that we own. If we find something more advantageous, we might consider that.
Okay. Running out of time here, but let's talk money. I mean, if the bond should be approved, what are we talking about in terms of a tax increase?
Well, in terms of the tax increase, as I recall the numbers, it's about $65 per 100,000 of assessed valuation for the three facilities. So, and then another approximately, I want to say $11 or so. I need to look at the numbers, but I guess a better way for me to do this is, including what we might need additionally for maintenance and operation, we will need to go through truth of taxation to do some things for maintenance and operation. That's also on that website where it shows that. But I know this for sure, that for $20 a month, we can build these for a person who has a $300,000 assessed value home. For less than $20 a month, we can have this new elementary school, this new junior high school, and this pool facility. And that includes the additional maintenance and operation that we need to have.
Okay. We'll talk about what later on with you when you guys actually decide what to do here and what your other alternatives are. But I was thinking, it was a year ago, real quick, where we had the problem with the yearbook and the Photoshop. Any problems this year? I haven't heard of any.
No, there's been no problems with it, and we made appropriate adjustments there. And, that's gone very smoothly.
Yeah. So how did you prevent that from happening again? Just instituted some policy, or?
Well, we made some changes over at the high school, but in essence, what we've done is make sure that that what we're doing over there is right for the kids and right for the school district and right for the school. So the administration has done some things. The school district has altered, is in right now in the midst of reviewing its dress policy, and that's part of the conversation too. So all of that's happened here. The reason it's gone as well as it has, I think, is the community's accepted, you know, what we have done, what we did this year.
Okay. Terry, we'll check back with you in August. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Terry Shoemaker, the superintendent of Wasatch County Schools. 8:41, good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Council meeting tomorrow, starting in a study session at 2:30 in the studio with me to review the agenda. I have Park City Manager Diane Foster along with Ann Ober. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Diane, it's a lengthy meeting. The study session beginning with a community engagement discussion. This is... What, an effort by the city to engage citizens to do what exactly?
Back in February of 2014, City Council identified 13 top priorities. In December of 2014, they narrowed those down to two critical priorities, which are housing and transportation. They also identified three top priorities, which were historic preservation, Lower Park Avenue, and community engagement. And as such, with the critical priorities, we bring them to council every single month, and every quarter we bring them the top priorities. And so this is a check-in on all the things that we have going on in the community. And as you can see from there's not only a lot of things that are going on that the city is trying to engage the community, but also their quality type things, like the, for example, the open house where we bring about 15 different departments from the city together in one place so that people can get an idea of all the things that are happening this summer. The city council had directed staff last fall to run a running for public office workshop, and we did that in conjunction with the Park Record, and that was well attended. There was, we've been doing some check-in on the visioning, other things like Lower Park Avenue outreach. We had a community forum a couple weeks ago, and we've got more coming up on that in July. We've got more things going on housing, National Citizen Survey, grand opening of the library, some neighborhood meetings coming up, and Ann can talk to you about a community growth forum on June 15th. So, and I'll tell you, I think the efforts are paying off, and actually these efforts are led by Phyllis Robinson. And the reason I think they're paying off is we had 12 applicants that City Council will be interviewing for the Special Events Advisory Committee. I believe initially 17 applicants for the Historic Preservation Board. So people are engaged, and it's what makes this community great. It's, you know, government doesn't do it alone.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, when you talk about engagement, though, it seems like people really only get engaged when they're unhappy with something.
Well, I don't think that's the case if you look at what's been happening lately. In other words, the turnout that we've had for the Lower Park Ave Community Forum, that's about what do you want for the future and what are the opportunities. So, we didn't hear people upset about things in Lower Park Ave. It's really talking about what the vision is for the future.
Yeah. And then you hear from Eric Nelson, you know, weeks ago about, trying to engage the city with, you know, the project there at 205 Main Street. And yet nothing happened. I mean,
I think you saw a very engaged council in that particular situation, a very engaged council, and staff is following up on that one, and I don't have an update on that, but I don't think that's a lack of engagement. That was an issue of was the code what everyone wanted it to be?
Yeah, and I guess I just think that when people do come to try and engage, if they're not felt like the council's reacting to their concerns, then, you know, it's kind of like, well, why bother?
Well, I think you've seen a change on the school board, right? They used to not respond, and our city council has always and has traditionally responded, and quite often when people come and give public input, they'll direct staff to look into something. In other cases, they'll refer people to something, or they'll volunteer themselves to meet with someone afterwards. Typically, we don't engage in a long, drawn-out discussion on a topic specifically because it's not on the agenda, but I think you've seen a very engaged community and council, and it's been exciting to see a really terrific turnout at council meetings recently.
Ann, let's just talk briefly about that June 15th forum. What's going to happen there?
Well, it's perfect timing to talk about community engagement. We're doing a What's Next Park City. We're going to be doing an overview as to what kind of growth the entire state can see through Envision Utah, as well as talking about what we can expect in our region and locally. Discussing ways that we can impact and create complete community. And the council has talked a lot about trying to create complete communities as we grow. And that includes things like making sure we have enough daycare, making sure that we have grocery stores and places that people can walk to them. If we want to solve some of our congestion problems, we're going to have to make it really easy and accessible for people to get their daily needs met within walking or biking distance.
Okay. So that's happening the 15th of June?
It is. It's at the Santee Auditorium, our brand new, beautiful facility. Please come check it out. This is our first event in the building after our grand opening, and we can't wait to have people there. It's going to start at 5:45. We're going to have light snacks, and then we'll start the discussions or the presentations at 6:15. There's going to be follow-up neighborhood meetings that are going to happen the next week. That's really when council members are going to go out and just listen. So those meetings will be posted as well in the newspaper, and we'll have more in the next week.
All right. Also, a housing discussion, Diane. The council is scheduled to talk about city-owned housing, or lots at least. We're talking about what places like China Bridge parking structure or Lower Park Avenue?
Absolutely. Flagpole lot. City Council's already given direction for staff to do a massing study. They're not quite sure that housing will fit on the Brewpub lot, but that's one that they're doing a massing study on. So that's part of it. And this is a comprehensive housing agenda. While City Council hasn't yet adopted the final budget, they are right now. They gave a a head nod to $40 million over the next 5 years in housing. And so that's quite an aggressive schedule. And what's interesting is while we feel it's aggressive, I think the community will see it as maybe a little bit slower than they want. So, for example, 1450, 1460, we're already engaged on a project on that, and that's going to put somewhere between 6 and 8 homes on that site, and those will City Council hasn't decided yet, but those will probably be affordable to attainable homes. Already started on the Lower Park Avenue charrette, and that actually will continue in July, and the dates are in the staff report. I think we've got Design Studio the 13th through the 16th of July, and that'll be an opportunity for the community members to engage with design professionals to say, hey, what kind of homes do you want here, and what do you want them to look and feel like? We're also looking at city-owned property. So the Bertinelli House staff is recommending that we go ahead and rehab that ourselves, and that we possibly use it for. We're always lacking city staffing housing, so maybe one property for that. And then there's a whole lot of other things that council's focused on with regard to property acquisition and also a neighborhood preservation program.
Something I was surprised to read, there was even talk about building housing in the library field.
There is. That was one of our council members suggested that we should look at. And it's not, for all the dog lovers, it is not in the library field. It's at the north end of the library field. So where the trees are and where typically the dogs aren't. It's kind of, it's a bit of a dead space, and there are a few parking spaces there, limited parking spaces there. And the question was, could you put 4 or 5 homes there? So right now, staff will just evaluate it from a massing study perspective. And obviously, none of these are set in stone. I will say that I do believe that City Council's on the fast track for 1450, 1460 and getting that built. But the rest of it is absolutely open for community input.
Okay. An update on the Daily Mine. Where do things stand there? We're looking at maybe saving the old structure. And
There is a manager's report. And city staff, Assistant City Manager Matt Dias is heading up that project along with folks from building, from water, from planning. Our historic planners are involved, and they're interfacing with the Park City Historical Society and Museum. And I will say, we have reached out to partners. It's not going to be a cheap effort, and we have reached out to partners. And thus far, the city seems like the only one who's willing to put in funding. But as you know, this is a top priority of city councils, and it has been for many, many years, historic preservation. The city has put quite literally millions of dollars into historic preservation. And this is not one that Sandra Morrison or anyone else thought was going to fall over, right? We had a mine collapse that ended up taking the structure with it. But that being said, it's an important structure to our community. Our partners have said that while they are not in a position or don't want to contribute money, they actually think it's important that we re-erect that. And the city council direction is to see if we can put that up as close to the current location as it is.
All right. We also discussed the budget again, looking at new fees. We're talking about fees for the library rentals, building and engineering fees going up as well? Or?
These are new fees. I don't believe we have an increase specifically in building fees, but with the new library and we have new library spaces available, we needed to define what are those fees. Also in the fee schedule is the elevation surcharge, but obviously that doesn't get formally adopted until we actually, council adopts the budget, which we're hoping to do on June 18th. I will remind folks that council directed staff to put this elevation surcharge for water. That means if you live uphill, you're going to pay a little bit more for water. To put that on the agenda for public input every single meeting. And I will say, City Council, because of their heavy agenda and also the fact that they wanted to provide maximum opportunities for people to provide public input, both on the Mountain Accord as well as on the elevation surcharge, they've directed staff to add a meeting on June 11th. So they'll be meeting every single week in June.
Okay. Well, let's talk real quick. That is on the agenda, the Mountain Accord and a local agreement. Is there... people can look at the agreement?
We've had, in the packet, we've updated to talk about the draft new blueprint. So they've amended the blueprint with public input, and that means that they have removed the connection between the front and the back as going into phase two for the EIS. It is still in there as a future study. There's some questions that came out of this process. People didn't have enough information about whether or not there are any economic benefits or what kind of modes we'd even be talking about. So that study remains, but it is not in the formal moving forward towards construction portion of the Mountain Accord. There are some other really cool pieces in there as well, including the environmental preservation work and additional study of the environmental systems. And so we're going to be talking about all those things, and we are inviting people to come out, hear what's changed in the blueprint, and then make comment to the council over the course of the next couple weeks. We will not be formally adopting the interlocal agreement this week. That's going to be on the June 18th agenda, but they can see the draft interlocal agreement in the packet as well, and they're welcome to comment on that as well.
Okay, so the comments, I mean, could be made this week during the regular meeting at 6?
Yep.
Or at the 11th or the 18th meeting?
Correct.
Okay, I'm going to leave it at that. Diane and Ann, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks.
KPCW News Time now, 8:54. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Hope Alliance Board has accepted the resignation of Executive Director Melissa Caffey. In the studio with me to talk about what's next, I have Melissa Caffey and the Chairman of the Board, Glenn Artis. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
Okay, well, maybe we'll start with you, Melissa. Just done?
30 years in nonprofit, and I am. Yeah.
Okay.
Had a kind of an epiphany a few months ago and started talking to John Hanrahan and Glenn and thought, okay, you know what? Let's talk about timing. So we had the breakfast coming up and several trips to plan, and I was training new staff, and they found a new director, and I'm playing.
Well, good. So you're officially retired at this point then?
I am. I'll look for something else sometime this summer, probably. Not in nonprofit. Go back to volunteering. But I want to play.
All right. First. So you were with the Hope Alliance how long?
4.5 years.
Okay. And then, I mean, some of your accomplishments over those years?
Oh, Glenn?
you tell them. But I have to interrupt one thing. First thing, when I first walked in, I haven't seen Melissa for about a week and a half. And she looked at me and she says, how do people have time to work?
It's been kind of fun catching up with people, yeah. And I'm going to see a lot of family and my grandson, and going to Europe in the fall for Doug has business there. So, yeah, it's really been fun catching up with people. I'm sure I'll be sad soon, but not right now.
Okay. Glenn, I mean, so she's done a great job.
Incredible
hard to
job. Let's see. I've known Melissa since what? Early?
We
late,
don't know.
Late 80s, something like
maybe,
that. Yeah. So about as long as I've known you, Leslie. So, she's done an incredible job. I was on the board about 2 years before she came on, and we were pretty bad shape. We were in Salt Lake and just struggling a little bit. She came on and turned us around, and now we're probably the best shape we've been in since I've been on the board. So, and there was a great article in the paper that gave what she had done. So I wish I'd brought that. I could have read some of that to you. So,
all right. In the meantime, though, you have hired somebody new?
Yes, we have. A girl named Angela Wright. She comes from the YMCA. She lives in Salt Lake. She comes up here mountain biking all the time, though, so she's very familiar with Park City. And she's working on a part-time basis right now, and then I think she'll go full-time the end of June, I believe. I can't really remember the timing, but Melissa's shaking her head, so I must be right. So,
well,
yeah.
I'm not sure. I know she has her MBA and a lot of large nonprofit experience, so I think it'll be a great addition, new energy.
Yeah. Is that the bulk of the job, raising money?
No. I wish. It's being involved with all the programs and projects and volunteers and board and budgets and all of those business aspects of it as well. So it's everything. It's a small organization, but, you know, luckily an incredibly engaged board, and even our emeritus board is something most people would envy. You know, a lot of people that are still really involved that have served for years. So we couldn't be in better shape, I don't think.
I think there's six of us on the board right now. We've lost some people and gained some, so I'm not quite sure. But Melissa had to deal with six different strong-willed individuals, and she handled that very well. I have to take my hat off to her for that. So sometimes she wants to scream at us, but that's okay.
Actually, there were 13.
Well, 13 when we first started. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So it was challenging.
A small organization with worldwide implications. I mean, that's what you do is, mm-hmm. is go to what, third world countries to try and improve their lives?
Yeah. Eight since I started. I mean, we were finishing up a project, a joint project with Choice Humanitarian in Kenya. When I came on board, and we did a trip to Paraguay that year in Galapagos, dental, medical. We've been helping with eyeglass prevention thing in China. I mean, so, and then our regular countries, and you know, Kim Meehan's the Haiti lady, and there's new programs starting there. But also, Derek Loyola and Del Fuller, two board members, went with Sally George, our program coordinator, and they're looking at new projects in Guatemala. So really busy, but good.
Well, we've stayed in the U.S. now, too. We've gone to the Indian Reservation twice, I believe, and then now we've done two clinics at the People's Health Clinic. So we're becoming a little more local.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll look forward to meeting your new director, Angela, when she gets her feet on the ground.
And definitely. We'll bring her up.
And best of luck to you.
Thank
Melissa.
You, Les. Thanks for having us.
Bye-bye.
KPCW News Time now, 8:59.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.